Today's reading is from Daniel. O Lord, I prayed. You are a great and awesome God. You always fulfill your promises of mercy to those who love you and keep your laws. But we have sinned so much. We have rebelled against you and scorned your commands. We have flouted all the laws you gave us, disobeyed, turned away, and haven't listened to your voice. Oh God, hear your servant's prayer. Listen as I plead. Let your face shine again with peace and joy. We don't ask because we merit help, but because you are so merciful. Oh Lord, hear. Oh Lord, forgive. Oh Lord, listen to me and act, because your people bear your name, the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Good to be back, everybody. As Jamelyn said at the opening of the service, I spent the last week in Haiti, and we had a small team of 11 of us, and we had a great time. There were five guys here, but four of us were all bunked in the same room that, I don't know, was you could reach across the room and touch the other bunk, you know? And it wasn't so much the sleeping space, it was all the stuff that we brought down. We didn't have any place for all of our dirty, sweaty clothes. And so as the week went on, it began to kind of get a little intense, especially. And so it reminded me of something that happened when I was a sophomore in college. And this is kind of a quirky way to start a sermon, but just bear with me here. It reminded me of this incident in college. When I was in college, I backpacked around the Mediterranean with a group of 16 students. So we were studying the classical culture, Greek and Roman civilization, and it was 16 of us with a professor, and everything you needed for 4 or 5 months you carried on your backpack. And I don't know, because I was a sophomore in college and I don't really think about these things, I only packed 3 pairs of socks for 5 months. And I would take those socks and we would wash them out in the sink at the evening, and hang them up. But you can imagine what 3 socks, I don't know why I didn't buy socks. I mean, it's not like they're expensive, but I just kept using these same socks over and over. And it was a very glad and happy moment when we got to the end of the semester and we started kind of shedding things that we didn't need anymore. And I remember, that we're at the end and we were in France at the time. We were holed up in a little hostel and I didn't need these socks anymore. And I don't know what possessed me to do this, but I took my socks and I went into someone else's room and I hid them. I don't know why. I still don't remember my thought process, but I thought this will be a good practical joke. And I remember that, like, the next day, these guys, these other guys that were in this room came, does your room stink like our room stinks? And then the second day it was like, there is something, is there a gas leak somewhere? By the third day, I mean, they tore the room apart, top to bottom, looking for, and they finally found my pair of stinky socks. And it was amazing how one little pair of socks could just stink up this whole room. I was thinking about that in Haiti, strangely enough. But I found myself thinking, sometimes grace is simply inviting God to say, is there something in my life that's just stinking things up right now, that isn't clear, that isn't right, that I just need to offer up to God. And we're going to be talking about grace today, but as we talk about grace, we also recognize that sin is present in our lives, that even if it's something small, that even something small left alone and untended can spread its aroma and touch everything. So I wanted us to start before, at the top of the message, with this prayer that comes from Psalm 139. This is one of my favorite prayers, and I'm just going to invite us to say it together out loud, and for this to be our prayer, for God to find the stinky socks that we're inviting him in to work in our hearts this morning. So will you join with me? Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. See if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Amen. Roy Baumeister is a famous psychologist. His contribution to kind of the conversation of psychology today is that he did a lot of experiments testing the power of our will. Especially in the 80s, that was kind of, he was breaking ground. And he wanted to kind of answer the question, is willpower, is it a constant or can it grow or deplete? And he also wanted to know is, you know, if we exert our will in one situation, does that make it stronger or does it weaken it in some way, right? And so this was kind of his work that he was doing. And he, the way he did it is he took groups of people and he put them in a room where there were fresh, hot, gooey chocolate chip cookies. Now, one group, he said, help yourself to the chocolate chip cookies. And he had other snacks around as well. Eat as much as you want. The other group, he told, do not eat these. Instead, he put a plate of radishes next to the cookies. He said, I want you to eat the radishes instead. Now, because it was a experiment and people kind of signed up for it, they knew the point was they were supposed to exert their willpower. And sure enough, the people who were in that, you know, control group, they didn't eat the cookies. They ate the radishes. It's funny when you read his kind of reports of it. He says some people kind of picked up the cookies, even smelled it, but they put it down and they ate the radishes as they were supposed to because that's what they're supposed to do. But what was interesting, he really wasn't testing whether or not they'd eat the cookies. He wanted to see what would happen next. Right after they had this time where one group had to exert their willpower and the other group didn't, then they went into another room and they did a seemingly unrelated task. They gave them math problems that were difficult to solve. I mean, not just like basic math problems, but like Mensa, you know, like when you're on the plane and you go to the back of the magazine and like crazy hard Sudoku math problems, you know? And what he wanted to see is how long would they keep doing these math problems? And it was interesting. The group that had indulged themselves with cookies could stick with those problems on average twice as long as those who had been resisting cookies and eating radishes. Now, this isn't to say when your kid needs to do homework, give them cookies. There's no correlation between cookies and problem solving. There is a correlation, though, between when we exert our willpower, that actually when we are exerting our willpower, it can be weakened. It's not a constant thing. And the reason I bring this up is because we're talking about making changes stick. And our default, whenever we're trying to make a change stick, is to, you know, rely on our will, our power to choose a better path, a better way, determination, stick-to-itiveness. But experiments like this kind of make us realize that there are limits to how far our willpower can go. And in fact, where our willpower is weak, which is exactly the kind of stuff we're wanting to change, habits actually trump willpower just about every time. And that's because habits take no will to make happen. Last week, Jamelyn kind of talked about the habit loop, and Rob talked about it too. We've been kind of using a lot this series, the work of Charles Duhigg and the power of habit. And he says every habit has a loop. It starts with a trigger of some kind, and then a routine, and then a reward. So take brushing your teeth, for instance. There's a trigger you have in the morning. For me, it's when I feel like run my tongue along my front teeth, and I feel a little film on it. And I know that's my trigger. I haven't brushed my teeth yet. And then I do a routine and I brush my teeth and then I get a reward, which I guess is fresh breath and, you know, white teeth. Maybe a kiss from Jamelyn, maybe. So a little reward. So that's the way and that's a loop that we all have, that we all engage in. And the point is their research is that if you actually look at the brain and what's happening, there's a little spike in brain activity when you have the trigger. But then when you're actually doing the routine, your brain is on complete autopilot. You are not thinking about every tooth that you're brushing. Your brain is actually thinking about something else entirely different because you're not thinking. There's no willpower involved in brushing your teeth. When you're driving to work or to drop your kids off at school, you are not thinking about where you're going. Your brain is kind of on autopilot and free to do other things. There's no willpower involved. So when you drive by a fast food restaurant and you see those golden arches and you pull in, it may feel like a choice that you just made, but actually, no, it's just a routine. There was a trigger, the golden arch, and then you found yourself pulling in because your brain was on autopilot, and then you might as well get the fries and the Coke while you're there. That's your reward. It's just a loop. And this works in positive ways as well. When I first started running to prepare for the half marathon, it took tremendous willpower at first because I didn't like running. I wasn't used to it. I remember I was counting down the seconds, you know, until I could take my break every time. But now there's a certain point at which it only takes willpower to get started. And then my brain goes on autopilot and I can think about other things. I'm not focused on my breathing and all that because I'm used to it. It's a habit at this point. This has good and bad implications for us. The first, the good. So if you're trying to make a change and you're relying on your will, the good news is this, is you only have to exercise your will about 5-6 times a day. Only 5 or 6 crucial moments in the day is when your willpower is really needed to break a trigger, you know, to break a habit or to start a new habit. It only takes a little moment of willpower to keep on driving instead of pulling in to McDonald's. It only takes a little bit of willpower to bite your tongue when you really want to react or to delete that email before you send. It only takes a little bit of willpower to put that thing back on the shelf or back on the rack that you know you shouldn't buy. Only a little bit of willpower to go to the gym or to set aside the time for prayer or for reading. That's the good news. It only takes 5 or 6 times a day. The bad news is that when your will is weakened, those 5 or 6 moments are almost impossible. And it's not just making change that depletes our willpower. That's the work of Baumeister and other psychologists who followed him, is that actually our will is taxed all the time by problem solving, or if we are ever in a chaotic, loud, and stressful environment, that works on our will. So if you have small children at home, and you find, I don't have willpower, well, guess what? It's all getting used by your kids. Or if you work in a stressful work environment where there's conflict between colleagues and bosses, I mean, that depletes your willpower. Or anytime you're in a place where you have to pretend to be something you're not, that's your willpower is being used. And then when those temptations, those crucial moments come, you find you don't have the resolve you need to resist. And here's the real kicker, is when you fail, it takes more willpower to try again, doesn't it? I mean, it doesn't take much willpower to keep positive momentum going, but when you mess up and you have to pick yourself up and try again, that takes even more willpower. John Ortberg describes this as the try harder cycle. He says, you know, we start by trying harder to exert our will, and that leads to fatigue. We get tired. And then out of our fatigue comes failure of some kind. We quit whatever habit we're trying to fix. And then out of that quitting comes guilt. And then out of guilt, we try harder. That leads to fatigue. You can kind of see this loop. In any kind of change that you've been doing in the new year, does this look familiar? It's because it's the way our brains work. It's natural. This chart comes from a book that I took to Haiti with me called The Me I Want to Be. I read it years ago, but I took it with me because John talks a lot about grace and change and the way those two fit together. The title of the book, The Me I Want to Be, comes from an incident that he had, a conversation with his wife. She called him into the bedroom one day, and he didn't know what to expect, and he walked into the bedroom, and there she stood with an index card. And he thought to himself, this is not good. He calls this the list. And on this index card, she had a list of, I don't want to say complaints, because they weren't complaints, but they were, I don't know what they were. They all started, John says, with a phrase, when our marriage is working right. And so she said, when our marriage is working right, there's a partnership between us. You know, we take turns, we value each other's work, but lately you've been acting as if your work is more important than mine, or if it's your work is more important than home, and that's off. The next, when our marriage is working right, you bring a lightness and a sense of humor to it, but lately you've been snappy and irritable. And it went kind of, there's a whole list, he said. And he said, you know, the more he listened to this list, which she obviously had prepared and written on an index card, he said, you know, I knew she was right, that everything she was saying was true of me. He said, and I didn't have any defense, except finally I just said, you know, I agree with everything you're saying, but I'm doing the best I can. He says, you know, that's like the trump card that you play. Like you know, you can't win the argument because she was right in every other possibility, but at least when you say, I'm doing the best I can, it's like, you can't top that. The response you're supposed to get is sympathy, compassion. I know you're doing, I'm here for you. Nancy, his wife, didn't respond that way. Instead, she said, no, you're not. You are not doing the best you can. There are things you could be doing that you are not doing. You are not saying no to work. You are not setting us, you know, you're not prioritizing us. You're not seeing a counselor. There are things you could do that you're not doing. And reflecting on that, John says, you know,